Okay, thank you, Alyssa. In fact, it's I wanted to say again now what I said extensively last week, because I gave a talk which is online, which lasts 1 hour and a half, including the questions. And so I have extracted a few things which are relevant to the question Alyssa was asking: what to extract from cloud line surveys and the power of heterodyne spectroscopy.
Oh, the microphone.
Of, but I've been recorded. Okay. Oh, I'm losing time.
We'll give you back 30 seconds.
And I will address the dissipation of turbulence, and more precisely the solenoidal part of the dissipation, which is related to the vorticity, and not the compressional part, which is related to shocks and increase of density. And it's a work which I have been doing over the years with many collaborators, and the most recent is Pierre Leblanc, who is here, and Jérôme Petit with Atiram, both of them. So how is it possible to trace the vorticity in and velocity shears in from line observations? Well, it's out of power or no? So we use the line centroid velocity, which is the first moment of the line. And there are many biases for this quantity, which have been extensively discussed in the literature, because radiative transfer and therefore density distribution, velocity distribution enter this quantity, which is the line as a function of velocity. And it's very difficult to ascribe to the statistic of centroids what is due to density and what is due to pure velocity. Instead of that, we use this quantity, but we work only on the extrema of increments of these centroid velocities between two positions. And we have shown in 1996, working on numerical simulation of mean-leg compressible turbulence, that the extrema of this large velocity increment here are somehow tracing a subset of the regions where this quantity is the maximum. So you recognize the peaks of this quantity. So it's not a one-to-one correspondence, but at least by mapping the extrema of large velocity increments, we can have an idea of this quantity, which is a complicated quantity. It's the line of sight integrated, it's what I said before. It's the line of sight integrated average of the variation of the line of sight velocity in the plane of the sky. And this is not zero, probably because in turbulence, all the little fluctuations of Vx over dy, dvx over dy cancel out, and you end up along the line of sight with only a few large values which don't cancel out. So the average in turbulence, as you see on this map, is not zero. There is structure in this quantity, which is a projected quantity. So we have applied that to, so all what is now in the talk has been discussed the other last week. So we have been applying this method on two small spheres, which I don't know if you see the box here. And in the high latitude cloud and in the torus molecular cloud, at the scale of 30 parsec, this high latitude cloud is unbounded. It has a virial mass which is about one tenth of its virial mass, while the torus is virialized at the scale of 30 parsec. And both of them, interestingly, have the same virial mass because they have the same internal velocity dispersion at the 30 parsec scale. And you have here a map of the same map, almost the same map that Paul showed yesterday, where you have the projections of the magnetic field orientation obtained from ILOS. superposed with a map of the coal dust emission computed following the method of Abergel, which we discussed the other day. And you see the same kind of filaments that which are very visible in 13CO and 13CO, sorry. I just want to trace here the orientation of the magnetic field in this area. Around the little field that we mapped. So when we, the field, the one parsec field which is in the torus is has a very small turbulence, small amount of turbulence. The velocity dispersion is very small compared to that in the high latitude cloud. So it means that somehow in the torus cloud, in this field, turbulence has dissipated. And the Polaris field has two small dense cores, while the torus field has no, it's a cloud edge and it does not have a dense core. So when you build the probability distribution functions of the increments of centroid velocity in the two fields over decreasing lags, at large lags, you have Gaussian distributions, and at lags which are smaller and smaller, you see non-Gaussian tails which appear in the distribution. In Polaris, they are very prominent, and in torus, which is less turbulent, the wings, the tails, the non-Gaussian tails, don't appear. So then the next point is to trace the positions where these tails exist. Maybe I will come back to that later. And the result is the following. You have structures which are very small, which seem to be coherent, and elongated in the case of torus, elongated again along the direction of the magnetic field, which is... I don't know why it disappears.
You want this?
Yes, okay. Thanks. That's your. So here you have the structure of largest CVIs in the torus field, which is very elongated, very weak. These are scales in velocity in kilometer per second, and parallel to the local magnetic field. While in Polaris, the RMS dispersion of the orientation of the structure is about 30 degrees, and the magnetic field in that field, measured a little further from this field, is in like that, as this orientation. And you know that the maximum increments in the Polaris field, which is the most turbulent at large scale, is 0.2 kilometer per second, and there are only 0.06, 0.08 in the less turbulent field. And the thing that I wanted, that we have done recently with Pierre, is to extend the map that I just showed you, which was that big in the high latitude cloud. We have extended the map to more than one parsec scale with the mosaic of receivers at URAM. And we have applied the same method as previously on the small field, finding the locus of the largest velocity increments, but in the 12CO 2219 this time. And we find that the structure that we had previously here, well, the orientation is different because this is LB and the other is in Eridec. So the structures which are here, you find them here, you recognize them, but then you find out that this structure that we barely saw at small scale extends up to a few parsecs, well, two parsecs, and stays very narrow with some structures. It's a map in progress. We have not, we got time to complete the map, but it's a very thin, coherent structure, which is pointing towards the two Lomas dense cores which are located here. So it is not a map of integrated intensity, it's not a map of matter, it's a pure velocity structure. And this is the corresponding map of 12 CO221 integrated intensity in 12 CO221. And the dense cores are hidden here. You don't see them. The big structure I just showed you is here. And the column density of gas that you observe along this structure is only 2 10 to the 21st per square centimeter. So it's not, it's a very tiny, not tiny, but it's relatively tiny amount of matter. And when you make a cut, a space velocity cut in that direction, which intercepts the velocity structure I showed before, you see that structure. So it means that in that part of the cut, the velocities, which is here, is about constant. And then there is a very sharp shear, and then another part with almost constant velocity on that side.
In physical units, what is the distance between the velocity jump and the red stuff?
It's about between that and that, 0.1 kilometer per sec.
0.1, sorry?
0.1 per sec.
Okay, I wonder, because this is...
The max velocity shear is about 40 kilometers per second per parsec. It is probably unresolved. The extrema of velocity are 3 kilometers per second, and this is about 0.1 parsec.
So that red blob in the cruising velocity diagram is the sort of faint green thing along the line?
Yes, it's that.
Oh, is that one over there?
Yeah, blue is blue, and red is red. Thanks to Pierre.
But I wonder, there is a filament that you're crossing through that probably has...
It is here. And you see, after you have a hole of total column density which corresponds to that, I would say, and then the scale is a bit different. So red is not red there, but and the max of matter is here, so it's here.
But the one we like is a column, the really...
It's very weak, it's weaker column density.
But that's the integrating density map on the left. So the
yes.
filament that I see there is real, and it corresponds to the velocity structure in the previous map.
Yes, yeah.
But
it corresponds, to that.
So, yeah. Also, the reason why I don't see a large density enhancement on the right is because it's spread through by the velocity.
Yeah,
it's
velocity.
But there is a jump in density where there is a jump in velocity, actually, that I haven't thought about it before, because...
There is a jump in column density.
Yes, in column
there
density.
Is not... The thing that I skipped is just that, which is what do we trace with this extrema of centroid velocity increments? We are tracing, so these are, again, velocity space cuts in 12 CO, and so the line goes that way. Here you have the peaks of the lines in the grayscale, and you see here broad wings which exist and which are very localized. The centroid velocity is doing that, and the extrema, the increments computed between adjacent positions do that. And you see that the extrema of the increments are tracing the edges of these line wings. And this gas is optically thin in 12 CO because we have several lines in 13 CO, 120, 221, to allow us to say that this gas is optically thin in 12 CO. So there is an excess of column density at the position of the shear here. But it's not an increase of density. That's all that I wanted to say.
So you paraphrase that by saying some things that look like filaments are places where the shear is gone out, and there's no increase in density.
No. And what I wanted to, the point I wanted to make is that this thing is really, really very large compared to the scale at which the dense cores are forming. And very narrow.
So did you guys know from simulations, in other words, what this is a position for this velocity space, right? It's like a sheet. But do you know what things that look like that in position for the velocity space look like in real space? In other words, like, what could cause that? And is it really a, is it a sheet in regular space?
It's a, in other words, it's a contact structure between two large-scale things which touch each other over a very thin... Yeah.
We have such a structure. Roby Benarji and I have a paper on large formation of a large-scale spinning filament. It comes out of our hydrodynamics calculation, but it's as if in that paper we could use AMR to track this. There is a sense of giving a spin from a two sort of sheet-like things that are converging. And that's where you acquire some sort of sense of shear, right, at that.
Exactly. That yeah, yeah.
And that's, Roby is here, he could...
But it's the way in turbulence...
Bleak shock.
It's the large-scale bleak shock.
In turbulence, it's the way the coherent structures seen in vorticity are built, because they are fed by large-scale motions and they are spinning at small scale
exactly.
Over the...
That's precisely yeah.
It does not fit exactly the picture because we have the problem with the orientation. Well, I cannot address that. It is exactly as if we were observing the shear in the plane of the shear, which is totally unlikely. So there is something with the CO and the way CO is produced in that shear.
Yeah, so it's these two surfaces.
Mm. It's unlikely, but it's not impossible.
But it's not impossible since we.
Right.
Yeah.
If you did the same cut now down where the dense cores are, what would we see?
I have not the cut. There is a. In 13CO, the bulk of the gas is in between like that, and it makes an arc which goes on, which encompasses the dense cores. And there is a I may have done well. And there is a velocity gradient along the matter, so the 13CO filaments which are attached to the dense cores. But in 12CO, I have to go back to the old, or we can do it here. Here, for instance, across this edge, we have a Plateau de Bure observations in 12CO. I have it also, I can show you. We see exactly the same velocity shear, but it is filtered, so it's interferometry data, so, plus the short spacings. We see the same velocity shear over 1,000 AU. So instead of having 4 kilometers per second per parsec, in this region, tiny, which is only 2 minutes by one arc minute, it's the field of the Plateau de Bure, we have 200 kilometers per second per parsec shear.
Look. At that place, you also see a density in it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So
well, a brightness, again, a brightness enhancement. The dense core,
there are dense cores.
No, the dense core, they are tiny. They are this scale is really huge. So the dense core, they are tiny here. There is one here and one here. And the field that we have done, mapped in, is again in translucent gas. There is, perhaps there is dense gas, but only tiny structures.
So is there, my question is basically, is there a physical connection between the regions where you do see a density enhancement in the core and the shear that is produced? Is this flow actually helping in certain regions to create the conditions for a dense core to...
Well, I show you, but Alisa is going to...
No, we still have 3 minutes.
Yes, it's that. So the 13CO is like, to answer your questions, the region, so we are back to the small scale field. But so the dense cores are exactly here and here. And the regions of large velocity increments are the blue contours. So the matter, the dense matter seen in 13CO and large column density gas is here. And I know that there is a velocity gradient along this structure. How these things help the gas, and there is some weak velocity gradient also along that one. How these things connect and help the gas? Is it an infall or is it an inflow at, or something which is part of turbulent motions? We don't know. It's hard to, having only the line of sight velocity, it's very hard to, when you see gradients, there is coherence, there is some coherence. This is published in a paper we wrote with Pierre this year. There is some coherence in projected line of sight velocity of all these structures, but we cannot say whether there is a real global motion along them.
I mean, I didn't think it would be interesting to hear what Paul would say, but I mean, what I was going to say is that I think this is where even with kind of limited chemical models, the taking of a simulation and trying to see if you see this kind of effect in this kind of pollution in large space would be interesting.
Because it's low here, right?
It's very low here. Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Alexi told me something yesterday, which was that the more, I hope I say exactly what you said, the more physics you put in the numerical simulations, the less you believe them.
Well, this is because the question is like, how much do you think the chemistry in this region is going to be so important that you never know?
If you didn't do the chemistry, you hadn't known about it, you wouldn't see these cores and see 18O.
Yes, because it's a coolant.
Well, I guess these stars are forming in local holes. that would be really interesting. You'd come up with a whole theory that the star had pushed the gas away.
Yeah, that was a problem. I mean, yeah, that was a problem. The lower density.
I'm just saying, I hate chemistry. I've come to realize you can't ignore it in any of these problems.
It's terrible, but Alexei.
Alexei said that because he wants to be the first one to look at chemistry.
I would say it's perhaps even worse because detailed one-dimensional model treating self-consistently some advanced chemistry and UV transfer without any dynamics are not able to represent the CO abundance.
Yes. Yeah.
So I would say it's even worse. But
even if it's not CO, I mean, it would still just be interesting, even if you didn't even do anything other than project a simulation into the 2D plane and make a position-position velocity map, you know, and see what this kind of structure resembles in 3D, in real 3D. Because I can't put it back together in my head.
Seems to me this is okay without chemistry because the CO is just a tracer of the velocity, it's the loss of structure.
Yeah,
it's like ignoring the.
No, we're missing a color density probe here. I would use our scattering method because this is low AV and you could get a very reliable estimate of column density from scattering at a very high resolution, higher than these observations. It would be really interesting. It's easy, you can do it in 1 or 2 nines in a region like that.
So what the reason that I wanted to show that is that in the big surveys that we have now of molecular clouds, it may be possible to trace these regions of strong velocity shear, except for the fact that if they are very tiny and involve a very small amount of matter, each of them, they will be blended together if you have big GMCs and. But we have never tried that in places other than, yes, we have done that in this edge of the Taurus molecular cloud and in that field, which are translucent. And
we're going to have to look at this, but I want to ask one more question. What's the width of one of those? I'm just trying to figure out.
The width out. In thickness?
In our set.
15, well, it's the width of the light, but so it's 15 arcseconds.
15.
No, 30. Well, it depends. It's 0.03. So I leave.
There's a good result.
Oh, sorry, I forgot. Thank you.